From Hallmark, a wish that all our families can be together this Christmas.
I want you to listen to this. Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Happy holidays from Blood and Black Rum Podcast. This Christmas, we're doing something slightly different. We're bringing you on an adventure through Hallmark Christmas movies, specifically those starring Lacey Chabert, in a series we're calling Chabering Gifts. You can expect visits from Christmas past and present, trips through Rome, and a whole lot more. We hope you enjoy our very festive and slightly romantic approach to this year's Christmas season. And just remember, heavy petting is not allowed.
Goulet!
Hey guys, welcome back to the Blood and Black Rum Podcast. I'm Ryan from ColdSweatation.com, and I'm joined with my co-host, Martin.
How's it going?
Doing well. A little late on this episode. Sorry about that. Holidays got in the way, of course, festivities and everything. But we are continuing our excellent Chabering Gifts series with another episode of a Lacey Chabert Hallmark movie. And this time, because we're post-Christmas, we're going to forgo the Christmas holiday in this movie. And instead, we thought, what if we took one that had... Well, first of all, I looked for a New Year's movie with Lacey Chabert. And this bitch doesn't have one. Why isn't she doing any New Year? We should question, why isn't Hallmark doing many New Year's movies? Because it just makes sense. You know, they have, what, like 3 months of Christmas movies. Why don't they have any New Year's movies after Christmas ends?
There should be a Haul Out the Holly supplementary film to go with, you know.
That's right. Like, Haul in the Holly. the New Year's movie.
Where's the, you know, also too, because this these films like to borrow a lot of Canadian actors. Where's, like, Boxing Day? You know?
Ooh, that's true. That's true. Why don't they have Love on Boxing Day or something like that?
Cleaning up the mistakes on Boxing Day. And
I believe, like, for Canada, Boxing Day is a really big shopping day for them. You know, it's kind of like a Black Friday of Canada. So, yeah, it should be like a big shopping movie where they go shopping and all of a sudden they fall in love at a big mall or something. And it all happens on Boxing Day. It would be magical.
No, that's where, like, the cleanup is. Like, you wake up and you're like, hey, you weren't wearing a condom.
Oh. Let's go out on Boxing Day and get the Plan B. and the whole movie is revolving around a mishaps where they can't find it in stores. It's all sold out.
It's like, hey, when I said put it there, I didn't mean put it there, you fucking weird.
Plan B mishap. Yeah, no, but they didn't have any New Year's movies, which is unfortunate. But the next best thing was a movie that takes place just in the wintertime, right? It's just like it's kind of like a nondescript
winter
time period.
Just winter.
And it also takes place in Colorado, so it could have been like in the ski resort area. So it could have been any time, really. We could be talking March here, you know. No, it's, like I said, it's a nondescript time. What I watched this on, they actually had, it was like a rebroadcast of it, and it had like Kitten Bowl coming up, you know, and stuff like that. So it's obviously sometime around February when they aired it, or close to it. I think it was like January sometime. But yeah, it's a good movie to lead us out in Chabering Gifts, because it's still a Lacey Chabert Hallmark romance movie, but it's not based around Christmas, but it does have winter in it. So. And you had said, you know, now that we've opened this bag of gifts, we're going to have to do every single Lacey Chabert Hallmark movie.
We've committed to the bit.
Yeah. And does that include the Hallmark movies and mysteries one?
Those are probably going to be the best one.
The tango ones, the detective did the tango. It's like a Hallmark's version of a giallo film. Like, it's got like sort of some of those names like that. A detective tangos twice. So, you know, with the alliteration of a giallo film, yeah. But
those are the ones I'm most interested in. Probably the best ones, like, you know, it's like
crossword puzzle murders.
Lacey Chabert and who took a dookie in the urinal.
They really messed up the bathroom in that museum. We need to find the culprit. I am curious to see how Lacey comes off as a detective, like the you know, a cozy mystery style detective.
I know, seeing as the only job she's had so far is a vent plan.
it really feels like with the Hallmark movies too, they Hallmark was like, we need something else. We got to have more. We can't just have Christmas movies all year long. And they're like, well, cozy mystery genre in books is really popular. Like, people write about cats solving murders all the time.
That's what's defined as a cozy, like, what I was just about to ask you, what is the genre of cozy mystery even like entail?
Well,
like
the tale
of the missing candy cane with cocoa.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. That's it. That's basically it. It's like having a, it's kind of like what they are doing for the Lacey Chabert ones, it sounds like, which is having a unlikely person solve the murder because the police are so inept. They're like, we need to get someone on this case that's not a part of the police force. No one's worked it before. We're a small town. We don't know how to solve murders. But, and so they get like a person to do it. And then normally they are situated around various elements of like hobbies, right? Like the sewing circle. Like, oh, the sewing group gets together and all of a sudden there's a gruesome murder in town. And they're like, let's solve it while we're drinking hot toddies and sitting around in our sewing circle. And that's a cozy. It's kind of started by Agatha Christie because some of Agatha Christie's, mysteries were kind of considered a cozies, although they were a little bit more serious than what cozies have kind of come out with.
Oh, I thought you were going to say racist.
It's got two in some of them, but
because they're Victorian.
No, actually, they're not. They're like in early 1930s, 1950s, somewhere.
Whoa! Yeah. Not
as old as that. But yeah, so Agatha Christie kind of started those a little bit. Like, obviously, cozies were they wasn't like labeled cozy, but like some of Miss Marple's cases in the Agatha Christie world would be a cozy. And now it encompasses pretty much everything. So you got like cats. There's like the topic is cats. There's like a random cat and they have a cat and then they solve mysteries. There are the dogs. There's a big ones about dogs too, like the Bow Wow Before Christmas and stuff like that. So
Air Bud's graduated from putting a ball in the hole
basketball
to Richard Karn's delight, and now it's moved on to
yeah. And then you've got like I just read one during Halloween season about a haunted library that solves murders. It's just like the lady that works at a library, it's also haunted, and there's a murder too. And you know, to a certain point, you have to question these cozies and like, how can this person keep stumbling upon murders? Not many murders I've stumbled upon in my, you know, in my 34 years of life.
I was just saying,
none.
Don't short trip yourself there.
Yeah. None.
Well, also,
I'll say,
the fun part about these things, like there's a murder in town and this is like the first murder in like our history. What do we do? Like, we had one here like a decade ago. We don't have a police force in the town that we live. We have a state trooper barracks, but we don't have an actual police force. The FBI showed up. So like,
right.
Like, all right.
Like
to come down and be like, all right, we got to put some work in today. Can't just be looking for, terrorists.
I know. So that's like what it reminds me of, though. Like, Hallmark was basically just thrown out there like, yeah, cozy mysteries. They're very popular in a book genre. Let's just make some. And
what's the Dean Koontz version?
The Dean Koontz version of a cozy? It's a good question. I don't really know. Dean Koontz doesn't really do cozies. What he does is he doesn't anymore. What he really does now, he has like basically a formula in his notebook, basically. And it's like, take this kind of, wacky serial killer type guy who's obviously evil, right? Like, there's no good about him whatsoever. He doesn't really have any good qualities. And this unlikely protagonist who probably also has a dog somewhere, and sometimes get in a kid in there too. Kid helps out too. Very precocious, very smart, kind of genius-like figure. And together they help stop this evil bastard from doing stuff. And that's pretty much the new Dean Koontz formula of like pretty much every book that he's been writing. Here and there he'll throw in some supernatural elements or something. But yeah, he's got a formula that's been going on. It's working very well because Amazon has a deal with him. He puts out like 3 books a year.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
You're not writing at that point.
I am kind of under the impression that he must have some sort of ghostwriter. You know, it definitely seems like he probably writes a majority of it, but he's probably got a ghostwriter just kind of like stuffing it here and there. It would be my guess. You know, James Patterson too. You know, he definitely has ghostwriters. He pumps out like 20 books a year with name on it, but it's basically written by someone else.
That's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. So he like basically writes the template. He's like, here's what I think should happen. And then like, here you go. My guest writer is going to go write the rest of this. So helps get people's names on books. But, yeah, James Patterson's raking in the money from that shit.
So I guess we're probably going to be doing the Roman Polanski film Ghostwriter. So
there you go. All right. So I guess we should get to the movie on hand though. Way off topic there. We're covering Winter in Vail. Vail being the town in Colorado, ski resort style town. Popular tourist attraction. It's not as well known as the other, you know, the Aspen, Colorado, that, you know, big ski resort town. I think Aspen's bigger than Vail, but I don't really know because I'm not a rich person. I don't go to these fucking places. I don't ski, for Christ's sakes. Which is, it's kind of interesting too in this movie that the protagonist does not ski and moves to Vail, because you would think that this movie being basically a tourist brochure for Vail, they would want to get in some skiing in here, but no.
Well, I think as we discussed before, these films are literally just Lacey Chabert says, you know what would be fun for me to do? Yeah. I want to go eat biscotti in Rome. Right away, Miss Chabert. We got a film for you.
On the next flight.
Same thing with this one. I feel like she was like, I want to eat schnitzel and have hot cocoa in the winter. You got it. It's just Lacey Chabert's like to-do list. Like, I haven't done that yet.
Pretty much. It's a, you know, it's like, and like you said, they basically do this Mad Lib style. So they're like, well, do we have a script that can accommodate that? It's like a failing restaurant. Yep, we could do that one. Throw it in Vail, get Mr. Chabert on a plane out there right now. And yeah, that's basically it. But they also act as like, again, like we said in Christmas in Rome, it's like, oh, you poor schlub, you'll never get to Rome. So here you go. Here's this Hallmark movie where you can see what it might be like if you were as, you know, as charmed as Lacey Chabert to get down there. But you're not. You won't go there. So here's the best you're going to see of it with Franco Nero.
I know. That's what this film is missing is, you know,
it's
all
missing
these films.
The star power. They all need to get, you know, some cult film actor in here.
It's like, where's Trey and Trey Parker, you know, showing up, you know, as the Colorado star, you know, start, and Matt Stone as like the Colorado star power here to be like,
too bad they couldn't unearth like Lee Van Cleef for one of these.
Scotch in hand. Yeah.
Zombie Lee. It's time to get up. We need you for Winter in Vail.
You just hear Primus's baseline. Bam.
It would be great. I would kill this G. Lee Van Cleef in a Hallmark movie. It's just too bad. It's too bad he wasn't around for that. He had to be born in the 20s. It's a bummer.
But no, like this film, just like the rest of them, it's set in a picturesque location. And it's literally just a check off of like, here's some fun things Lace would like to do this week. Make it happen.
It's great. And she's in, I think she's pretty much exactly like producer on this too, right? Like
now she is. Yeah. She wasn't
for this one. I don't know about, I, you know, this, no. This is actually, we should point out, this is actually kind of an earlier film. It's 2020. So the ones that we've done have actually been after this movie was made. So Christmas in Rome was 2021. Christmas at Castle Heart was 2022. Mm-hmm. Haul Out the Holly was 2022. So
A Melody, Christmas Melody was like 2014.
Yeah, that was very early. What was Maybe Christmas at Castle Heart was like, no, Christmas at Castle Heart was 2021. Didn't we do one from 2019 as well?
That was Christmas in Rome.
Oh, Christmas in Rome was 2019. Oh, I had that wrong. Okay, so Christmas in Rome was earlier than this. My bad. They're probably all made around the same time. They just probably had Lacey on flights. All right, Miss Lacey, you're going to Rome next. Go to Vail. And then they just pump them out all at different times. All right, we've done enough setup here. Let's take a break and talk about the beer that we have on the show today. And it's a nice special one for Sunday as well, which is when we're recording this episode. On New Year's Eve, actually. Good for, you know, football day. And this one is touches Martin's heart. It was one that really stood out to him. I'll let you take it away. Well, you could talk about it first.
No, I thought you were going to start playing Chicago's Hear the Inspiration. Like, you know, have that keyboard keyed up. Like,
I know, I do need to get, you know, because we do use...
Well, you know what? Instead of asking your dad for an Oculus Rift for fucking Christmas... Ask for a soundboard.
That's right. I should have gotten that. But you know what? We have a soundboard available to us, and we just don't use it on here. So I do need to keep some stuff to put on the soundboard and just, you know, rip it out every now and then. We don't make enough use of it.
Yeah, well, it'd make it much more. You know what? We should go for more sports talk radio style of, like, you know, wild and wacky antics, hot takes, and, you know, sound drops.
I mean, yeah, I still do have this one. Still got that one on there, but
well, you know what? Don't play that because the Yankees are terrible.
Still got that one. I have a couple on here, but like I got drumroll too, I think. So if we ever need a lead up to your joke or something, we could do that.
Oh, then do you have a rim shot?
I don't know if that one leads into the shot. But enough dicking around. What do we got for the beer on the show today?
So, one of the posts that was recently posted by our local beer shop was this beer, and I was like, hey, you should get it. It'd be nice to have. It's brought to you by Beer Tree, which is based out of the forgotten region of New York, the Southern Tier.
And I don't know why. I always think Beer Tree is in Massachusetts for some reason. Maybe I'm getting...
You're thinking of Treehouse.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. It just, though, whenever I think Beer Tree, I'm like, oh, Massachusetts.
Well, I always thought they were down in, like, the Catskills, so.
We're all over the place. We don't know where.
But they're not. They're based in the Southern Tier, the forgotten part of New York State, which means, by default, they have to also be Bills fans. So, they have for us today this wonderful white trash can that will go on my mantle. Because it's beautifully decorated with the Zubaz print that is one of the reasons why I have a Labatt can saved that when they were doing the Zubaz editions and they had the Bills one. So today they have out right now a Buffalo Bills inspired Pilsner. Excuse me, Jesus Christ. Buffalo Bills style Pilsner. It's in this nice, beautiful Zubaz can with the old school Bills logo on there from the 60s, and it's called Pills by a Billion, and it's 4.3 ABV Pilsner, and it is delightful, but I do have a problem with it.
What's that?
And that's not the beer itself. It should be illegal to sell Pilsners by four packs.
Yeah.
Totally defeats the purpose of drinking them. What are you going to do with a four-pack of a Pilsner?
Can you imagine showing up to a football game? And you're like, hey, guys, brought me beer. It's a four-pack. Only two of you are going to be able to have some of it.
I got this wonderful Czech-style Pilsner. Oh, great. I have enough for two of you.
Yeah. It's so funny. It's like six people out there are like, oh, great, a four. What are we going to do with that? Yeah, no, I definitely agree. It's a little insulting when you go and you get a, you know, Pilsner like that, you know. And I do have to say, because I bought this one, it was on the cheaper side for what you get from Beer Tree. But still, I mean, come on. you need a six pack. And even if that means not making the tall boy cans, but you put it in a six pack of regular 12 ounce cans. Okay. But the four pack thing for a Pilsner, I think has got to go. It's a dumb, you know,
it's totally antithetical to the style of beer that you're buying. Mm-hmm. Because the whole reason why four packs exist is because the six pack is for your lighter, more, you know, crushable, delightful beers. You know, that's why you can get a six pack, even like an IPA. That's like, you know, just a regular bog standard, like West Coast IPA or something. And it's like, oh, that's great. But for the double variant or the triple variant, they're in four packs because they have much, you know, more gasoline to them, much more nick, much more potency. So, you know, you're not going to be plowing through them on a Sunday as you watch the Bills crush the Patriots 42-7. Still. Like, but overall, though, this is a very good Pilsner. It's very light, very crisp, very refreshing. Got a great body, great mouthfeel. It's got a nice, subtle, crisp, you know, breadiness to it. Little hoppy note to it. You know, nothing, you know, too overwhelming. A lot like a Pilsner Urquell, you know, just like a delightful, wonderful, crisp, refreshing beer to drink.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's not really doing anything different, but as a Pilsner, you're not really expecting it to either. I think you're right in that it's, you know, it's not like a normal American style Pilsner. It's more of a Czech style Pilsner. It's got a nice body to it.
It says American on the website, but
I would disagree. You know, it doesn't really have, like, if somebody was like accustomed to drinking like a Coors or a Miller Lite or something like that, and they tasted this, they'd be like, that doesn't really taste like what I normally have. I think it definitely, you know, it's definitely not like, like a Pilsner Urquell, but it's definitely got more of a, you know, it's got that malty breadiness to it, that you get from a more of a Czech style Pilsner. I think it's really good though. It's, you know, it's kind of bog standard, but again, you're not really looking for them to reinvent anything by a standard Pilsner. And I think for Bills fans, you know, this one really stands out with the Zubaz can. It's really cool.
If you're a craft beer, as I say, if you're a craft beers fan and, you're looking for something enjoyable and you're a you know, Bills fan like I am, straight up your alley, because it's a hell of a lot better than Pils Mafia.
Yep. And then the other thing that I would say too is, if you've seen, if you looked on Untappd, people get some people are giving this a one. If you're giving a Pilsner a one, you are not a beer fan.
Why are they giving it a one?
I don't know. But I've seen like some people give it like a one. It's, you're not a beer fan if you can't enjoy a nice Pilsner. If that's what's called a snob, it's a snob. You know, because if you can't enjoy the nice Pilsner style, just,
I know, listening to the people who are like, oh, well, you know, if it's not like 12%, it's, you know, trash.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, you have to be able to, if you're really a beer fan, and that's not saying like if a beer is truly bad, like you should like it. This beer is obviously not bad. It's a good Pilsner. And if you can't enjoy a nice standard Pilsner, then what are you doing drinking beer? You know, you can't be a self-proclaimed beer fanatic if you don't like most of the styles. I mean, obviously you don't need to like every single style and be a beer fan. I'm not going to be a gatekeeper here and say you got to like a Rauch beer and, you know, you don't like smoky flavors, but, you got to like a Pilsner and you got to appreciate the simplicity sometimes of just having a Pilsner. Instead of all those flavors of all the hops that are thrown in there. So this is a really good one from Beer Tree. Never really been disappointed by Beer Tree, to be honest with you.
Look at that. Look at this asshole. One. Mm-hmm. Go fuck yourself. Two and a quarter. Go fuck yourself.
Go fuck yourself. The can alone makes it worth more than a one.
Because, like, I mean, like, other half, well, it's other half, right, that makes Pils Mafia?
No, it is
Thin Man. Sorry,
Thin Man. Yeah, Thin Man. Pils Mafia. Yeah. I don't think I had that one. I think you had that one.
And which Pils Mafia isn't bad. It is a good beer. You know, it's definitely not bad. I'm not throwing too much shade at Thin Man, but I think, you know, treat, you know, beer tree does a better job. And again, like the Pils Mafia cans, like if you remember the joke from the Fairly Odd Parents and Dad's eating a box of Chesteros. He's like, these make me big and strong. And Timmy's like, don't you want a box of Timmy-O's? And he's like, son, those are for pack mules. I need to achieve. Like, you know, the difference in presentation is right there.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree.
Thin Man Pills Mafia, while nice, it's Timmy-O's. It's for pack mules. Pills by a billion. Shit, those are Chesteros.
There you go. All right. So let's talk about Winter in Vale. This movie is pretty much a culmination of all of the ones that we talked about. And, you know, to be honest with you, like we said, Christmas in Rome actually happened in 2019. And then this one came out in 2020. And this movie is basically a combination of Christmas in Rome and Christmas at Castle Hart. In my opinion, I think they, like, those two together are really like mashed into one, and it's Winter in Vale.
A lot of synergy.
Like, because the ideas here are pretty much very similar to Christmas in Rome. It's like Lisa Schubert is moving to a different area. At least in Christmas in Rome, we didn't see her move to Rome. Like, that was just kind of like a thing she had done.
Did.
Yeah, in the past, and now we're meeting her. In Winter in Vale, her uncle Grady, who sounds like a fucking amazing guy. This guy, I wish I had met this guy when he was alive, because everybody in this movie talks about, like, Grady.
They should have renamed the town Gradyville. Like,
I know. It's like, Grady, he was amazing. He gave me all of his money.
He cured my rickets.
Yeah, the film treats him like he's like some bastion of hope here. They've got, instead of, you know, in like Brazil, they have the statue of Jesus, and like in Vale, they have fucking radio.
It's not Christian. It's not Cristo Redentor, it's Grady's.
Yeah.
No, but also too, it's such a fucking stupid thing, because she's like, oh, I got mail from my uncle. Uncle's lawyer. Didn't he die? Like, yeah, he's dead. Oh, he left me his chalet, which I haven't seen him in like a decade. Like, you mean to tell me you were so important to your uncle? Like,
yeah, because she even says, she's like, yeah, he invited me up there like last year, but I couldn't go because I
like for so no much. not last year, for years, but she's for been years, too busy. Yeah. She's been too busy at the LA grind to stop and take a trip up to Colorado.
So apparently Grady was such a nice guy. He was like, well, even though my niece hasn't visited me, it seems like she's just way too busy and too important for little old Uncle Grady. I'm so nice that I'm going to leave her my chalet anyway, because I really think she'd like it up here in Vail.
Well, what's the estate tax like in Colorado? Because maybe that's like,
I'm going to fuck her over with estate taxes.
That's what I'm saying, because maybe that's how he's getting back at her. Like, fuck.
It's like when you go on The Price is Right and you win $120,000 and you're like, joke's on you. It's going to be about $10,000 after we take out the taxes. Joke's on you. But yeah, like, the idea is that he leaves her the chalet in Vail, Colorado, and she's like, wow, you know what? I don't really like my life right now. I've been working so much, and I didn't get that promotion as vice president. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to quit my job. I'm just going to move up to Vail, and I'm going to live in this new chalet that I was left. And like, people are around her are like, sure, that's a good idea. Have you seen the chalet? Do you know, like, is this like the Chicken Shack chalet at Great Escape? Like, is it just like, you know, smells like oil fryer? Like, have you seen it yet? You never visited Uncle Grady, so you don't know what it's like.
Up in Vail. Like, you haven't even been up there, you know?
Yeah, is it like a shack in the woods?
Because he's seen her. I mean, she hasn't seen her since he's moved up to Vail, so.
Right.
She has no clue what she's getting into. It's just a whim.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's just like, wouldn't it be great if you could just like pick up your life and move it and just, you know, get out of a shitty situation. You know, you didn't get the, you know, you're not going to be VP anymore. So instead, you're just going to move to a different location, like all the way. Well, she's in LA, right? So she moves to Colorado. And again, this movie, like, just like A Christmas Melody, is like, LA. Wow. What a tropical place. What an exotic area. I can't believe you moved from big old LA to little old Colorado over here.
Took you took your Toyota RAV4 and drove all the way up to Colorado.
I love like the way that these movies always treat the moves and stuff like that, where it's just like, you know, a massive move across the country with all your stuff, and they just don't show it. And they're just like, oh, wow, I just took a nice little jaunty drive up here. It was so fun. And like, you didn't see like 17 U-Hauls taking bring out the bill is like $20,000 for renting all the U-Hauls. Would it be nice if you just had like the money and time to just be like, yeah, I'm just gonna move. It's just that easy. I don't know why immigrants just don't do this. Why don't they just legally come in here with a green card and just move? It's easy, not hard.
Anybody can fucking move and immigrate.
You just do it. You don't worry about the consequences.
Well, what's also funny too, again, like the plain spoken Mad Lib bluntness of like the whole setup of like as they're describing her situation, because again, you don't see her like rank getting hiked or anything, or like the troubles she's in. She's like, yeah, after I broke up with Bryce and my rent got hiked up in the car trouble that I have, I'm off to a great start this year. You know, and it's like you don't see any of that play out. You don't see her breaking up with her shitty boyfriend Bryce. You don't see her landlord going, hey, your rent's now $4,000 a month, pay up, bitch. And you don't see, like, you know, her car catching on fire or anything. She's just like, you know,
that stuff would be too real for this for the movie. People tuning into the Hallmark movies, they don't want to see the real.
But she's still going to a lunch at this fancy-ass restaurant in L.A. just to order a garden salad with side ranch.
I get the usual, the garden salad with side. And it's like, that's not a usual. That's just like a normal person's order sometimes. It's just like, a garden salad with ranch is just what somebody comes in one time and gets with like their French onion dip. That's not a lunch.
That's not a meal to be like, I'll have the garden salad with side ranch. You don't want to try their prime rib? No.
and probably at that restaurant, it's probably like $30 for that salad. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah, so she moves to
Vail. They charge $3 a crouton, so I have to limit my crouton.
It's, you know, it's kind of like a Christmas at Castle Heart too, where it's like, we're so poor. And then you see their apartment. It's like fucking massive, massive ass apartment.
It's Scream 7. Yeah. Like, yeah. We can't afford our apartment. And it's like, yeah, because you have this fucking magnificent view of Midtown.
Mm. So you'd have the Christmas in Rome part of moving to a different, like being in a different location, being in like a, you know, touristy attraction place that in Christmas in Rome is Rome.
Quitting or getting fired from your job.
Yep. In this movie, it is Vail. And then you have her being an event planner, which is Christmas at Castle Heart. She's an event planner at Christmas at Castle Heart. And in this case, she leaves an event planning place, which is called Elegant Events, which, you know.
How is that like the top premier like LA event thing? Like, oh.
If I saw that listed on Google, I think it's like a fucking fake ad, a spam ad. Some elegant events business.
Some Indian knockoff, like, you know, spam business.
Like, yeah, I'd be like, I'm not clicking on that. It's going to steal my identity. So I don't necessarily buy that someone who was like, Elegant Events, yeah, that's the best place that I'm going to be able to do my event planning with.
Don't you love too that when she's doing her pitch in the beginning, it's like the Swiss Alps, and this is basically like America's Swiss Alps that, you know, she's, you know, having her transformation at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. I love the move to Vail. It's great. And like, it's, you know, to be honest with you, like the first part when we see Vail looks nice and picturesque, right? Like, I've never been to Vail. I don't really know much about Vail besides the fact that it's a ski resort town. I did look it up after this movie, and yes, it is modeled after a Bavarian village, which is kind of cool. Like that in terms of where I would like to visit in Colorado, that definitely bumps Vail up a little bit. And I, you know, like, I've never really thought about like, oh, I want to go to Colorado. But if I did, cause I don't ski or snowboard or anything like that, but if I did want to go to Colorado, visiting a Bavarian village probably be up a little bit higher on my list.
Well, I was going to say, a lot of the shots were of Alberta.
They were shot in Alberta, Canada? All right, well then,
yeah,
I guess...
they did some shooting in Vail, but most of it was done in Alberta, Canada.
I guess that trumps it then. I'm going to Alberta instead.
Well, you want to know why you should go to Alberta, Canada?
Where is that?
Canadian Hero is from there.
Oh.
Bret Hitman Hart.
Ah, didn't know that.
Yeah, Bret Hart, Canadian Hero. He's from Alberta, Canada.
So she moves to Vail. She finds the chalet. And I was actually thinking, even before she gets to the chalet, I was thinking, wouldn't it be funny in like a, you know, kind of like a parody of a Hallmark movie if she got to the chalet and it was like absolutely trash, like shitty, terrible, terrible chalet, and she's dealing with it. And yet she gets there and it is in the process of being remodeled.
So, would you really even call that a chalet? It's just a house.
It's like a cabin-y house, right?
It's just literally like a regular old bog standard ski resort house.
Yeah, so yeah, it's like a cabin-y house, and it's got like that wraparound deck, which I really like too, because the movie brings up the fact that her love interest is an architect. And it's like the big thing about him being an architect, Owen, his name is that he designed this wraparound deck. And it's like, dude, it's just a fucking deck that goes around the house. What is there to design? It's literally just a deck it's like a square deck around the house. It's not a design.
That's why he's also a contractor.
Right, that's why he's not an architect. That's why he's not succeeded. It's not because his dad has a failing restaurant.
He's not bringing anything new.
He has no good ideas. You know, he's not Lloyd Wright over here. He's fucking designing a square deck for the house. It's not, you know, it's not rocket science there. Should the deck just be one side of the house? No, it should be all four sides of the house.
He pulled his schematics from a Sears and Roebuck magazine from like 1984. Like, oh, it'd be pretty cool if we had a deck.
Should it be an elevated deck? No. The house isn't elevated. All right, we'll keep it on the ground then. It's not a skyscraper. It's not engineering a bridge. He built a wraparound deck. It's funny though. And I thought too, it was kind of funny because when she gets there and like everything's kind of not done, and we find out Owen is the one that's been doing the remodeling on the house, and everything is kind of like in process, but nothing has actually been completed. It would have been funny if you find out, like, yeah, he's really not good at construction. He's just not a good general contractor at all.
Hell, the building burned down because it's like, oh, he rewired it wrong. And then you find out it turns out into a Lacey Chabert cozy mystery where she tries to figure out the arson case.
The arson. And the other thing that I really like about Hallmark
I was going to say real quick, she ends up like Cole Phelps. She's like picking shit up like, has nothing to do with what's going on.
The thing I like about the Hallmark movies too is especially when they need to do things. Like we saw this in Haul Out the Holly too, right? When they have to put up decorations and then the film like cuts to that. It's like a montage and then it cuts to them like putting one thing up and like, there. Done, you know, and they didn't actually do anything. This movie has that too, because we see in Winter in Vail, after Owen's doing like the construction and stuff in the house later on
with Buddy Rob.
With Rob, they are like in a living room area, and he's putting a chandelier up, and he like puts the cap on the top of the chandelier, and he's like there, wipes his hands, all finished, like. Okay, we didn't see him do any other types of construction.
Not only that, though, too, the whole like restoration of this cabin that's falling apart literally takes in what seems like 2 days. Like
2 days, yeah. They're doing the floor, they're doing the furnace, they're doing the lights,
the electric, the plumbing, like everything needs to be redone. And like within 2 days, him and his fucking buddy Rob are like,
we're
done.
You know what? He should just stay. If they're that good, they should stay in general contracting because they can get
not only that too. The fact that's hilarious is that because she's an event planner, she writes down like things that I think are most important that needs to be fixed first. And Owen, which when we will talk about when we first meet him, being kind of the douche lord that he is at first, he's like, you see that, Rob? She wants this done first, but he's already working on the floor, so we're going to do the floor.
We're going to do the floors, yeah. It's like, if you hired a general contractor and you said, like, I would like this done in this order, and the general contractor didn't do it, you'd be like, all right, well, I'm going to get a different general contractor.
But he, to be fair, he is kind of right, because, I mean, they were already working on it. So, like, I would be like, listen, you do what you guys were doing, because you already have everything planned out. You like it's not like these are new people on, you know, on site. It's like, so they've already been working on this. I'd be like, you just do what you need to do, and we'll come back to that.
I agree.
Well, but it's just funny the way he mansplains. He's like, damn, you see this list? You have the floor at number 7. We'll bump it up to number 2 because we already have the heating done. We fixed your thermostat. And so we'll put the floor at 2 instead of 7. And she's just like, yeah, okay, great. I love you.
The other thing, too, is like, doesn't she walk in one time and she like hits the thermostat and afterwards she's like, yeah, I hit it and it didn't work.
The night before because he fixed, you know, he turned the heat on when they, you know, first, you know, meet at the chalet and he's like, oh, this is how you have to get it to work, blah, blah, blah. And the heat runs out and she's like slamming at it the night before to try to get to work. And the next day when they're, you know, up and they're talking and she's like, oh, I hit the thermostat to try because it wasn't working. And he's like, oh, you hear that, Rob? She hit the thermostat and it didn't work.
Yeah, I'm such an ass. It's so funny.
But that did make me laugh because it is kind of funny.
It's great, though. I love it. Like Owen is an asshole at the beginning. Like, when she first meets him, she pulls up in town and she doesn't know.
What's funny, too, the way she pulls up is very like if it was a RAV4 commercial, like, the 2020 Toyota RAV4, like, you know, as like it comes to the end where, you know, like it kind of sits on a hill and parks perfectly, like, get one today at Toyota Days.
Yeah.
You know, and she gets out of the car and the guy's like, yeah, you can't fucking park there.
He's like, yeah, what does he say? Like,
Kevin
will be really happy about that.
No, Kevin.
Kevin will be really happy about that. She's like, why? Who's Kevin? It's like, oh, the tow guy. Here he comes right now. He's going to tow you fucking away. Yeah, he's an asshole. He definitely is an asshole. And the other thing I love, too, is that he fucking talks, like, out of his side of his mouth all the time. It's kind of like a Luke Bryan of Hallmark movies. Where he's got, like, that Clint Eastwood air about him.
Well, that whole part, too, of, like, yeah, you can't park there. Why not? Sign says parking will be towed. And it's like, try that in a small town.
Yeah. It's very funny. It has those elements. It's like, oh, the unlikely duo meeting. They'll never like each other. And then, oh no, who does she hire? Him. It's Owen. He's the general contractor. Oh no. How are they going to get along?
And not only that, too, along her way, you know, traipsing through Vail, she runs into the appropriately titled restaurant, which, shame on that man for not having that song just blast from his restaurant 24/7, you know?
Yeah, because I guess the thing that the film really wants you to know, this. You know, if you get one thing from Winter in Vail, it's that Vail is a German style town. It's got the Bavarian roots to it. It's got the restaurants that are styled after Bavarian style German restaurants. And so Edelweiss is that German style restaurant. And the funny thing that I think about this movie is that, like, if you see, like, the very busy, you know, the film talks about how busy the streets are, how busy Vail is, how touristy it is. And then all of a sudden, this Edelweiss, which is an authentic Bavarian restaurant that you would think, like, tourists would be flocking to, right? They're like, yeah, we're struggling. It's like a fucking Alpenhaus style German restaurant, massive inside, nicely decorated. And people are like, oh, you want to go to Edelweiss? No, I don't think so. That looks kind of tacky, kind of cheesy. They're not going there.
Which is funny, too, because they blame it on, like, the celebrity chefs and everything in town. It's like, what, Gordon Ramsay has a shop set up? Like, wouldn't you think, like, kind of like the charm, especially if it's like this whole
Bavarian style village, right? Right.
Like themed town. Like you would think people would be like, while we're up here skiing around, pretending we're in, you know, the Bavarian mountains, let's go to the shop called Edelweiss. That's where the girl wears her, they call, I think, a dirndl?
A dirndl.
You know.
And they make an exotic thing called strudel? I've never heard of it before, but.
Have you ever heard of Spitznudel?
Like, they go in there, like, tourists go in there, they're like, do you guys have the toaster strudel? No, sorry. This is authentic German strudel. Oh, okay, never mind then.
Which is funny, too, because a trivia note on this movie is Lacey Chabert also played a character in Mean Girls, Gretchen Wieners. His father invented the toaster strudel.
Well, that is a good trivia note on IMDb. That's great. But it is funny. Like, I just don't buy it. I don't buy that Edelweiss is, like, in this dire straits of, like, look how fucking fancy it is. Well, how are you keeping lights
not
on?
Not only that, too. It's not like they just have, just regular old Spitzel noodles. They, on the menu, is Asiago. Like, Asiago Spitzel. It's like, well, hell, I'll be there every day.
Right? I'm going there.
That sounds heavenly, you know.
It's hilarious. I don't buy this place is in trouble.
You know what they're missing? Hofbräu's chesty ladies.
That's
you know,
true.
Bringing,
That's
you know,
true. Bring, Unfortunately, the one chick is not the chesty lady that you're looking for. In,
But also, too, Hofbräu with their beautiful, you know, boxes of chesty ladies, you know, bringing steins around. That would definitely, you know.
Tickling fancy.
Yeah, bring people around to the fireplace there. You know, like, oh.
So basically, the idea is in Wintervale is Lacey Chabert, she's an event planner, doesn't have a job, right? Because she picked up, moved. She's kind of falling in love with Owen, who's remodeling her house and hoping to remodel other things in the bedroom. And then
with them not even making one loving look at it.
Yeah, that's a little too racy. Sorry for Hallmark. That's definitely too racy.
I say, just like every Hallmark film so far, like
absolutely,
especially like the one scene when they're like in the Edelweiss's dancing room. And we'll talk about more when we get to the ending part. But when they're like, she's like hanging up a light, and he's literally in the camera as she's like hanging up like the last chandelier. He's looking off to the side the entire time, like you know, like they're telling her, like telling him, like, hey. It's a Hallmark movie. Don't look at her dumpy. Don't look at her dumpy. Don't look at her ass. You're looking off. The stork brings the children. Look off screen. I was cracking up the entire time at that part. Like it's because it's like again, the whole every film that we've seen so far has that level of like intimacy. And I'm like, you know. Again, I'm like the poster too. Again, is like they're holding hands, but like 7 feet apart. It's like a seventh grade
and the
dance.
The poster is absolutely exquisitely photoshopped too. You can just
yes,
tell.
It is like
it's like they weren't even in the same room together when they had that picture also, taken photoshopped.
It was also during COVID, so you know.
I know. The other thing that I love about this, the whole idea of their romance, is that like they're. The unlikely duo, and then the film treats it like there's like it's literally like I think like 10 minutes left in the movie, and there's that whole thing where her job calls her back and they're like, we want you back, we'll give you just name your salary, name it, and we'll get you
you'll even get a corner office.
Yeah, we'll give you, and you got the views of LA, and I was thinking like the views of LA compared to Vail, where you got like fucking snowy mountains in the background and you got views in LA on in the top floor of your you know your suite there where you're seeing like the smog of LA. Like what kind of views are you talking about in LA? But anyway, they're like, come on back, we'll give you a salary, we'll give you any vice president position you want, we'll just name it, just name it. And then she does. It's like the conflict there is literally 10 minutes long, and it's just a stupid conflict because you know it's like she's not gonna like her job back there. She's going to come running back to Owen. The conflict is really dumb, but the romance itself is okay. Like it's probably better than like Haul Out the Holly, but it's again, it's that TVG winter and era Hallmark style romance of like, they don't touch. They don't pass sultry looks at each other. They basically just exist in the same room and seem like they might like each other a little bit for their personality. And then, you know, barring the fact that both of them are very good looking and, you know, obviously have physical chemistry. There is no physical touch at all in the Hallmark movies to, like, you know, sell anything about the romance. But I think probably the funniest thing about Winter in Vale to me is, you know, obviously Lacey's a event planner in this movie. She doesn't have a job, so she's been looking for jobs, and one comes across to her basically, and she's like, "What if we did a strudel fest? What if we? Is that a thing? Can we do a strudel fest? Has other people done this?" You would think an event planner would be like, "Wow, I can't believe I came up with this creative idea that's like no one's ever done before. Let's do a strudel fest." Instead, well, she's that, Googling on like this like generic search and find site that they show.
It's called Bing.
Yeah.
Literally the funniest part about that though is Owen being like, "I literally just took the two words and combined them into one."
She's like, "What is that? Is that a thing? Is that a thing?" He's like, I just took the two words, stuck them together. It's Strudelfest. But you would think, like, who cares if anybody's done it before? Let's do it. Strudelfest. Uncle Grady has this fucking kick-ass recipe that everybody's like, "I don't know, Uncle Grady. He had this recipe in his head. We don't know where the recipe went." And it's like literally in his house, just in
right a, under the, in a right book. Under the, under right the under the counter. Like, yeah. And she's like, "Oh." Carl's got tears down his eyes. Like, my friend, he left it for me, you know, and like, they should have had like a Skinner's Tuesday's Gone playing in the background. Like, you know,
Carl. Like, Carl's great. The actor's great. He's really hamming it up. I love it. But I also like that they named him Carl with a K. So, like, you had that German element to it.
Yeah, so you know it's like...
No. He's not Carl with a C, Americanized. No, he's authentic German. He's got a Carl with a K. It's crazy. It's funny. So, she sets up the Strudelfest. It's an event for Vale, and she organizes it in like 4 days or something like that. They're like, "Are you sure you can get this together in 4 days?"
I love to also like how just they have these random people in Vale too that they can also go to be like partake, and everyone's like, "Oh,
they've got like all the shopkeepers are like, yeah, I have a what does the one do? I can't remember. There's like." They're all like very like specific shops too that they have.
Well, again, like the one girl, like lady they cross country ski to, and like she's got a fondue restaurant.
Yeah, that's right, the fondue restaurant.
Which again too is also like Lacey says, like, wouldn't it be great if I had some fondue? And they're like, "You heard the lady, get her
you a fondue." Like, "Oh, this is the nice cheese fondue." And they're like, "Wait till you get the chocolate fondue." And then they have the hot cocoa bombs,
literally the most ridiculous thing ever. That's like literally the most bourgeois, like overly like touristy, decadent bullshit nonsense like I've ever heard in my life. Like watching that lady make that hot chocolate, it's like literally like, again, that's how you know these films again are like women porn, because it's like the most over the top, like bourgeois, like I dreamed a dream and this is what I came up with. Like, you know, wouldn't it be great if I had my hot cocoa with gold dust sprinkles and I put it together with little Irish cream marshmallows, and then you put the bomb in the
little mini marshmallows.
Yeah, like it's literally like the most ridiculous. Like, I imagine it's probably good, but at the same time too, it's literally the most like ridiculous concoct. Like, the lady, like, after they started drinking it, she's like, and they're like, "Oh, this is great." And she's like, "That's $95.
Yeah,
that's,
right.
That's the part you're missing for like your 12-ounce hot cocoa. Like, that'll be $95.
Right. Cause like, they wouldn't, like, they're not like giving them a free tasting. Why would they give them a free tasting? They're like, "Yeah, this is what we do. We invite you in. You could talk to the chef. And then you pay $95 to have that nice hot cocoa with her."
And then all the pastries they eat too. Cause later you see them in like the hotel, like, Shet like lobby, and he's got like 9 different puff pastries that are like decadent and ridiculous. He's like, It's like fucking Home Alone 2 at the end. Like, Kevin, you spent like $7,000 on like.
Yeah. I like, hot cocoa bombs have like really proliferated. They're like a big thing now. So like you can go to Target and buy like a $1.99 hot cocoa bomb.
Well, and these movies are for those women.
Yeah. You got like mini marshmallows in there. But I love that. And then Lacey Chabert goes back to LA that, you know, at the end where it's like the conference. Like, she get to Owen? She's like, my hot cocoa doesn't have gold flakes in it. Oh, man. It's like, what is this? Goldschlager? Like 2000s Eric Goldschlager. People have to have little gold.
Where was Lacey Chabert in Superbad instead of Emma Stone?
Yeah.
You know. Michael Cera would just be like, yeah, I'll bring a Goldschlager. Is that what you want?
Yeah, the whole idea that of assembling the Strudelfest is really kind of stupid, but you know, it works for the movie. The Strudelfest itself, though, acts like everybody is struggling in Vail.
Not only that too, they all act like the setup. It's like, here's your buffet, you know, hot, like you're at like a hot dish at like your peepaws, you know, like oh, here we go, we have a mac salad for you guys to have.
I think though the funniest part in 2020 is that an event planner is like, yeah, we'll help you get into a tour guide book. Who in their right mind in 2020 is like shopping around, going to places and like, I would like a tour guide book of Vail. Like that's
also why the Edelweiss is failing. Cause
yeah, right, exactly. Cause they're expecting to get into a tour guide book. It's like, if they were really a truly good event planner, they'd be like, make it TikToks here. They'd be like, you know, they'd be fucking do a TikTok ad. Like, you know, we've got a Facebook ad up there. We got Instagram up there. No, this event planner, Lacey Chabert, is getting a fucking tour guide book out. And no wonder they're failing, because it doesn't matter if you're the cover page of a tour guide book. No one's reading it. It's like getting a phone book in the mail.
Only 85-year-olds who aren't going to be like bothered to walk that far, because they'd be like, I want to go there, but that's so far away.
Right.
So
they'd be like, stop. They'd be like, you know, they're in Colorado in a nursing home and they're getting the Vail guidebook. And they're like, that would be so great if I could get to the Edelweiss, but I can't because I'm on.
My children abandoned me.
Yeah, I'm on dialysis. I can't go that far without dialysis. Those are the people getting the Vail tour guide books. So no wonder people aren't going to the Edelweiss.
I'm tired.
That, folks, is what we call a total give out.
Yes. I'm sorry.
We'll try to continue from there. Yeah, I mean, I guess the Strudelfest is a success. One thing this movie does have too is it has, like, with Christmas in Rome, the whole baking scene. The whole, like no, you can't just have a romance without baking. You have to
bake. It's foreplay. It's like, you know, like.
Right, exactly. It's like, look, you're going to put your wet in my dry.
You're like, oh, look at the way he kneads there. Imagine if he did it with other things.
I bet you he could knead my ass like that. Really get in there.
You know what Owen looks like? A man that doesn't go down.
That's true. It's a little too dirty down there for me.
He's not a bushman of the Kalahari. He doesn't go down there, you know. He's not playing in the muff.
Yeah, but like the baking scenes too are so set up. It's really funny because
everything's pre Yeah, where's like the real, like, I want Lacey Chabert being like, where the fuck the eggs? You know, like, yeah, like
frustration of like, oh shit, it's burning, it's burning, it's burning. Where's the butter? We gotta spread it on there.
Because like that's like a discussion I've had before of like, you know, wouldn't it be great, like, if you're watching the Food Channel and like Ina Garten's like, all right, today we're gonna make this nice pasta fagioli. And yeah, to start off with a nice, I can't believe I forgot the fucking butter. And like, you see her speeding down the highways of Long Island. Like,
I know.
My asshole husband didn't give me my butter.
This is like the Food Network's, like, executives got there and they were like setting out all the strudel recipe. And it's like, at that point, did you really make the strudel, or did you just, like, we talked about this with the Christmas in Rome, whatever they, I can't even remember what they made. It's like, did you really make it, or did you just assemble the ingredients? Like, you just literally put them
in a bowl. it's even more egregious than Christmas in Rome. In Christmas in Rome, like, literally, they're at, like, the bakery, and, like, everything's perfectly laid out.
The baker came in later on, was, like, molding the dough. And
yeah.
And he was like, yeah, I got this for you. No problem. And like, in here, too, their strudel comes out looking, like, immaculate. And they're like, yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's like, don't I wish also, I could make a strudel like that.
Don't you also love, too, of, like, how when, there is a funny line when Owen and Lacey are at the Edelweiss for the first time. And he's like, don't ask me how everything is. I'll just say it's good because I'm the owner's son. And she's like, so what's the best? What's the best thing here? And he's like, everything, you know, and they have like little snicker and chortle. And that is like a really funny and cute moment. Cause like, you know, again, Lacey does, you know, in these films does act and is incredibly charming.
Of course.
But the funny part is when she's like, again, it's like the playing up to, you know, white women of like, you don't have strudel on here. And he's like, what? And she's like, I'm sorry, I have to look at dessert first time. I just have to always look at the dessert first. Like, you know, because I'm just so naughty, you know.
Yeah. Just acting like that's
like, you know, that type of attitude of like, like, you know, like,
sometimes I have a piece of chocolate cake for breakfast. It's just so bad.
I'm just so bad, you know. Like, I was laughing so hard. This is like I would, because like me, I don't really care for dessert. So I'd be like, yeah, like for dessert, I'll have another schnitzel. Like, you know, like loaded up. Like for her, she's like, I'm just so bad. I gotta. I can look at dessert first.
What do you think about the ending of this movie? Where, you know, obviously we talked about there's that whole like 10-minute conflict of like, will she, won't she? Is she truly going to go back to her LA roots and do her job there? Or is she going to move to Colorado and live in this nice little chalet?
I do like that they kind of make her going back to her job awful.
She's
like,
yeah,
I'm vice president now. And then her boss is like, here's 7 things I need you to work on. And
it's
like,
7 o'clock. Like, you're going to be staying in the office. You know. Yeah.
Where is the realism of here? Lacey going home and like just like drinking a bottle of like fucking Yellowtail, and you just sadly
into
just
like the, like a goblet. It's like the whole bottle goes into the goblet. Yeah.
Or like she's got a box of Franza on standby, like,
or she takes up smoking.
I love work. Work.
She goes out for her smoke break.
Which is great too, because her, which is also fun too, because her friend Vienna is a piece of shit. Because she's like, "Wow, I thought you like you, maybe you shouldn't have to do all this work."
Yeah, right. Yeah, she's a really bad actress, to be honest with you. Vienna, it doesn't work. It's for me at least. She was really bad. Cause she, all the time she's like,
it's very, you know, like Mac and It's Always Sunny. Like, you can't tell me what to do. Like,
I love how she acts.
She's John Lovitz, like acting.
I love how she acts when, Lacey talks about Owen and she's like, yeah, Owen's here. And yeah, we're good friends. And Vienna's like, oh, you're really good friends, are you? It's
which is funny again. Which is funny too, because there's like, just like in all these films, the romance is so neutered. It's so like platonic.
Oh yeah,
there's no like, oh my, to any of it. It's all just
there's no like steaminess to it.
He's my man friend that helps me with things. It's also funny too, because like also like aren't these like a lot of these like based off like the books? So like you might be better off just reading the like fucking books on this type of shit. Because at least like with there, they're like, you know, they're going there.
They got
kink
to them. They got a little a little something something. Here, there's no kink at all. There, you know, it's not like it's not like this movie is showing any sort of interaction between them besides like normal friendship type things. And then like, and then you're supposed to get the last like 2 minutes where they're like, actually, I really like you. And then have like one little peck on the lips. You're supposed to be like, wow, I was waiting for that.
Steamy.
I know. Even in the, you know, the coldness of the veil atmosphere, they're emanating heat.
And you know, I was gonna say, you know, it's bad when the Puritans would be like, this is fine.
Yeah, right, exactly. Exactly.
This is fine entertainment.
I mean, the movie's not bad. It's just, I think it's close to Christmas in Rome. It might not be as good as Christmas in Rome. It's close to it. It's very similar. It's got like all the same beats to it. This is basically like replace all of the things that were in Christmas in Rome with various other elements, and you've got basically the same movie. And
which is also it's also the same thing as Christmas at Castle Heart, except there's not a sidekick to bungle things up where you're going like, oh, she did what?
And no CGI lights either. At least in this one, they actually did set up all of the decorations and stuff. I guess so. Let's give this movie a rating. So on a scale of 0 to 10, perfectly constructed strudels, what would you give Winter and Veil?
It's not just, oh man, it's not just strudel. It's apple strudel.
Mm. It's apple strudel.
The strudel of strudel,
which I think I would not prefer. I'm a raspberry strudel boy myself.
Me too.
Yeah, raspberry strudel. If you give me a raspberry strudel, I'm gonna eat it. I would eat that whole log of raspberry strudel. Apple strudel? I'll take or leave.
I do like too how when they talk about the different strudels for Strudel Fest, and there's like, there's a strudel coffee creamer, and which sounds good. I would love to try a strudel coffee creamer.
Sure.
Delightful. The strudel ice cream, and the guy's like, cinnamon and raisin. I'm like, what are you fucking putting in?
Like, why are you including raisin in this?
Yeah, why are you dropping raisins in my strudel ice cream, you fucking idiot?
I don't want raisins. Yeah, right. No wonder you're failing. You're out of Strudel Fest.
But still, like, it's kind of funny, like, listening to it, but that's the moot point. I'd give a Winter and Veil 5.5 Mom Jean Lacey Chabert dumpies. It's like, again, all these films have like their strengths and weaknesses. No matter how generic the concepts are. I get it. We're not the market for this. We did this as like a fun little, you know, homage. It's not a bad, like, again, like, you can't, outside of A Christmas Melody, you can't see any of these films are like downright awful, god awful films, because they're an hour and 24 minutes. They get in, they get out, they do their thing, hit their beats, and go on. The fact that they're all like nope by nope by nope is going to, depending on the subject matter of what the film's covering, is going to be your mileage in the film. This film's fine. Like, there's nothing really offensive about it. Again, it has a lot of same beats and notes of the previous films we've done. The baking, the, you know, girl boss who leaves her job to find herself, you know, and try to find love. Winter, the setting. It's okay. There's nothing offensive about this film. It's just, there's nothing that's also really exciting about the film either. Again, Lacey Chabert is the best part of these films by far. She's easily the one with the most acting talent by far, when she doesn't really even show off. But again, she does have a charm to her, you know, her little like chipmunky smile that, like, you know, kind of radiates out every time she does it. This is a fine film. There's some funny parts, you know, throughout it. Like, again, I do like kind of like the Bavarian, you know, aesthetics to it, being somebody who has, you know, Bavarian heritage, is, you know, it's fine. It's nice. It's kind of cool. You know, it's neat to see. Could have done more with it. You know, definitely could have done more with, like, you know, the winter atmosphere instead of just like tubing and cross country skiing. But again, I mean, there's not much to say. You're either going to like it. It's either a film that you're going to, if you watch the films that we've done before and you didn't like them, you're going to have a hard time liking this. If you're, you know, you like this, then you're going to like it. If you're going to be meh about it, meh about it. But yeah, I'd give it like a 5.5. Again, like, there's nothing offensive about this film. It's just kind of exists. And I'm kind of glad that Lacey Chabert has her own little kitchen of, this is what she does. She gets her payday. And she's happy with it and moves on. Like, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is like, it sits in a good space between like Christmas in Rome and Christmas at Castle Heart. It's probably not as good as Christmas at Rome in Rome. I think that's probably the best one that we've done so far, but it's not bad at all. It's really got like all of the beats that a Hallmark movie should have. I think it has a better romance than some of the other ones that we've seen, especially like Haul at the Holly. I think that one was definitely the worst that we've done in this Chabert and Gifts series. This one has everything that, you know, most people would enjoy about it. It's got like the two main leads are attractive and obviously share some sort of chemistry. I think the chemistry is a little bit better here. The romance itself is questionable. You know, obviously Hallmark is very remiss to do any sort of like touching, feeling, physical contact whatsoever. So you're kind of just getting like looks. Like, oh, they passed a look. They are very into each other. But other than that, like, everything else is pretty decent about it. The set design is decent. The element of like the Bavarian village is kind of nice for winter. You know, all of like the lighting and decorations is nice. Even though it's not Christmassy, it's more like a, you know, winter style festival. I would say it all works very well. Anything that has strudel in it is going to attract me. Doesn't matter what. So I like that element about it too. It does what it does pretty well. And I, you know, it definitely wasn't as off-putting as something like A Christmas Melody, which was difficult for me to get through. This one does everything fairly well, and, you know, it's really, like you said, it's really inoffensive. People will enjoy it for what it is, and if you like Hallmark movies, then you're definitely going to find a lot to enjoy about this one as well. For the people that aren't the market of this type of movie, I think it's still inoffensive enough where you could just sit down and watch it and be like, yeah, that was fine, you know. It's not something that you're going to walk away with remembering. And I watched it like almost a week ago. And I still remember it to a certain extent, but yeah, it fades from memory. It's not like something that will stick with you and be like, wow, Winter in Vale. Really thought about that one. Kept me up at night. But at the same time, you know, it's not really meant to be like that. It's meant to be an escapism for, you know, movie watching. And I think it does what it does pretty well. So I would say it's a good movie, and I would give it probably like a 7. I guess I would give it a 7.
That's higher than Christmas Now.
Yeah, I don't remember. Like, again, our ratings are really arbitrary. I don't really remember what I gave Christmas in Rome. Whatever I gave Christmas in Rome, give it about the same. 6.5, 7.
See, I think this is a better film than Christmas in Rome. But I think the fact that Franco Nero.
Oh, yeah.
Christmas in Rome, literally, like, just like that will forever, like. Like, out of all the Lacey Chabert films, like, these are the only 5 Hallmark films that we do by her. That one will radiate the most of my mind. Because, like, yeah, Franco fucking Nero just shows up. And he's like, to show you.
Gives you, like an additional point right on, right there.
Yeah, just to be like, you need to show the magic of her.
Exactly.
Yeah, look at the baubles.
It gives you an additional point just to have Franco Nero. So I agree. But yeah, this movie is not bad. It's fine to watch. You know, it's not something that you're gonna run out and see, but I think it hits all the right notes. So if you like that style of movie, Winterville's gonna be a good one for you. And I think it works as a January movie too. You know, it doesn't necessarily need to be a Christmas movie, but it works in terms of just a regular winter movie to watch. So
didn't you love too also at Strudelfest how when they're all dancing and having the strudel, there's just random people waving around a German flag, like and they're just sitting there waving a flag, like very you know, like they don't give a shit because their extra is getting paid like $2 during COVID, like yay.
I wish we had a Strudelfest. I would go.
We can start.
Yeah, we'll start it. It looks so easy. I mean, the film makes it look so easy to make a strudel. Let's just do it. We'll make Grady strudel.
Got to make sure you can see the Edelweiss's menus, though.
That's right. Yeah. So that's our Shebearing Gifts series. I think that's going to end it. We're through the holiday season. And I think we're going to move on to regular movies and probably go bi-weekly for the most part. But here and there, we might do a little check-in, do a little weekly thing. Kind of when a fancy hits us. We're actually almost to 300 episodes, so that's a milestone in and of itself that we'll probably celebrate with something.
What do you mean? Probably. We will. And what episode are we on?
I think this is about 278, maybe. Something like
okay,
that.
Okay, so we have a little while.
Oh, we got a little while. We got a little while.
So fun fact for 300. It's going to be Carpenter.
Sure.
Yeah.
Was it the last memoirs of the Invisible Man or something like that?
Salt on Precinct 13.
That makes sense. Yeah, probably a better one to do.
I mean, we've done almost all his entire filmography. So
sure. We haven't done...
But I say at this point we are like scraping the barrel of, you know, Carpenter to get to.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I say that is tradition. We have done The Thing and then we did Escape from New York. So
yeah, we haven't done Memoirs of the Invisible Man. We haven't done Starman. Elvis. Yeah, we haven't done Elvis. So there's a couple we haven't done. But yeah, I think that makes sense. Salt and Precinct 13 would be good.
I was joking when I said that. There's one big one we still haven't done.
They Live.
There you go.
We haven't done that one.
Yeah.
I watched that one not too long ago, recently, because it came out in 4K. So, yeah, that'd be a big one. So, yeah, 300. 300 is a big episode thing. And for 2024, I do have some resolutions that I would like to do for the podcast. One is marketing it more, you know. Getting more advertising out on different podcasts and stuff like that.
Why would you want to do that when we're already the Taylor Swift podcast?
That's true.
Yeah.
We're big deal.
You know, we're a pretty big fucking deal.
Yeah. If you like what you hear.
Our next probably big kind of block we've been kind of a little bit bandying about is probably going to be a John Saxon tribute.
It would be fun to do a John Saxon tribute, yeah. I don't know. Maybe we'll do that in a light month, like February or something. You know, a time where there's not a lot of stuff going on. I mean, February has Valentine's Day, but
we've ran that well dry. There's no point, kind of.
And John Saxon has a lot to pull from, so
I know.
You know, you could do all kinds of things with John Saxon.
We also are supposed to kind of dip a little bit more into the well of which the show was originally intended for. A little bit more Jallo.
True.
And a little bit, we've been saying to a whole lot of Politziatetsky, which we still haven't done yet. So. New year, new show. No more. We're a comic book movie out, friends, so we're done with that shit.
That's true. It probably is not going to happen. Probably not going to do it. All right.
Aquaman's in theaters right now. We couldn't care less.
No, not really. Not really, to be honest with you. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed our all of our episodes on Shabaran Gifts and the holiday season. Probably it made your holiday season a little bit brighter. We are on pretty much any podcasting app that you could think of. Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Homebase at Spotify. Subscribe to us. Leave us a nice review. We're on Facebook and Twitter. Search for us on there, Blood and Black Rum Podcast. And we have an email address, bloodandblackrumpodcast@gmail.com, where you can write to us, let us know what you like, what you don't like, movies you want us to cover on the show, and we'll take that into consideration. You can also donate to us on our Patreon page or our Spotify page. And anything you donate does go back towards beer, so we appreciate that in advance. Hope you tune in 2024 for our new episodes, as we'll continue on, just as we normally have, bi-weekly at least, sometimes weekly. And hope you enjoy the new season of Blood and Black Rum Podcast. So until the next episode,
take care.